Is Venom the grossest Marvel supervillain? We answer that question and more this week on Only Stupid Answers. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Only Stupid Answers. This is the show where we answer your questions about movies, TV shows, comic books, and Venom's goopy guys. We're talking about the goopy guys this week, our pals Venom and Carnage. With me, as always, is Roxy Stryer. And this week, we have a special guest, Sal from Comic Bop. Sal, say hi.
Hello.
Introduce yourself. Where are you from? Sure. Where do they know you from? Where can they find you?
You can always find me on the interwebs, your favorite local interweb station in your pocket at youtube.com/comicpop. If you like comics, if you don't like comics, or if you are a noob or an old hat at comics, you're welcome. Come by. And I don't mean like you're welcome as in the response to thank you. No, you are welcome to come join us and hang out on the couch with us and chat about your favorite or maybe your least favorite comic books. And join our other channel called Comic Pop Returns, where we do live shows like these. But not nearly as polished.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
You're very polished.
You're very kind.
We try to keep all the unpolished behind the scenes, as it were.
That's right. That's right.
So, Sal, you said it, and now I'm curious, what is your least favorite comic?
Oh, wow. It's tough, man. There's so many. There's so many
my least favorite comics.
What's funny is, thanks to this channel and my vocation, I have taken some of my least favorite comics and I've unleashed them on my loved ones. And as a result, we have gotten some outrageous conversations and interactions that I would never have even fathomed at that time. So now even my least favorite comics are some of my favorite comics. Like I remember growing up loathing the sequel to Secret Wars, Secret Wars 2 from 1985, bizarre psychodrama about existentialism and also colorful superheroes. We just did it on the couch and I was like, this is one of my favorite episodes. It's 2.5. We went on way too long. We got way into the weeds about like life and existence and non-existence. And it was just like, but it's just some silly cash grab for action figures. But yet, ends up being hilarious.
I know what you mean because I think one of the most popular episodes of this show is when Sam and I reviewed Transformers Last Night. That was the one. And Sam and I hated it so much. But it made for an entertaining episode.
Right, exactly. Yes,
our pulsing disdain for that movie really animated the episode. Now, so please, when you're done listening to this, go check all of that out. Go check Comic Pop out. But before... while you're listening to this, please give it 5-star reviews on Apple Podcasts or wherever you're listening to it. If you're watching this on YouTube, give a like and subscribe or whatever the kids say nowadays. and also, if you want more of this, if you listen to this episode, you're like, oh, you want more of this conversation, you want to hear Roxy and Mai's review of Venom, you can do that over at Patreon at patreon.com/onlystupidanswers. That will be out by the time that this episode is live. And also, if you listen to it on Spotify, every week we ask you a question on Spotify that you can then answer. A lot of good answers last week. We asked, what is your favorite board game? Because we were talking about Josh McCuga and his new game. Christopher Infanon said, Gloomhaven, Jaws of the Lion makes me want to buy actual Gloomhaven. I don't know what any of that means.
Gloomhaven.
Huh? It sounds like a video game instead of a board game.
Oh, I was hoping it was like a gardening thing, but I thought it was Gloom.
Yeah, it sounds like, I'm sure it's one of those like Settlers of Catan, like it's a big involved game, but it sounds like a Bloodborne sequel. You know what I mean?
It does, doesn't it? Yeah.
Bloodborne Gloomhaven. Yeshu Wazalewski says, I love Stratego and Phase 10. Does that count as a board game? I have no idea. Also, I haven't played Clue in forever, but I'm convinced I love it. He also informs me, also, it's pronounced Yeshu, but it is entertaining hearing it wrong. And it might be, you don't need to do this, but it might be in your best interest to just always remind me that. And every time you post it, because there's a good chance I'll forget again. And that is 100% my fault and not on you. And I do apologize. And Raisa Marie says, it would have to be Aggravation, the old-timey version of Trouble. You just go around knocking everyone's pieces off the board while trying to get yours safely around. Simple, but so frustrating.
You're telling me before Trouble, there was a game called Aggravation.
Apparently, according to Teresa Marie.
It's so weird that I invented that game, yet I don't know what it is and I've never heard of it.
Yeah, like, you should be. Wow. You just blocked it out. Once the second you were done, once the genius left you.
Wow. You're welcome.
You're welcome. Listen, that's the theme of today. You're welcome.
Mm-hmm. You're welcome.
You're welcome. So, Sal, every episode we like to begin by talking about what we are into this week. Are you into anything this week that you'd like to share with the class?
Yes, I was way into the Hickman run of X-Men. It got a little odd because of the Substack situation. Hickman's, of course, stepping a little further away from X-Men, but he is remaining just long enough to do an event, and that event is called Inferno. And I just read the first issue, and I gotta tell you, like, I've been enjoying X-Men, and I know that Duggan kind of took over for Hickman as far as like being the kind of guiding light for the line, and he's been doing a great job. The X-Men solo series, phenomenal stuff, and it was a really good spiritual successor to Hickman. But reading Inferno number one, which dropped on the day that we're of this recording, I gotta tell you, I felt the Hickman presence. I was like, oh my God, this is Hickman though.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
It really felt like it mattered. Like it was important. Like it was leading up to everything was leading up to this. And it's only the first issue. And I'm just like the last page of this issue. I'm just like, oh no. Yeah. I haven't felt this on the edge of my seat since the last thing Hickman wrote. So
I've only occasionally dipped my toe into the Hickman's whole, is it Dawn of X? Is that technically the phase we're in?
We're either in Dawn or Rain. I don't know. Okay.
The X's, we're doing something of X.
Something of X.
And it's largely because it's so daunting. There's just so many X books and they're all very connected. It reminds me a lot of the 90s. But every time he does one of these events, I try to like peek back in, be like, you know, because when he did Powers of X and the House. Other one. Yeah, House of X.
House of Powers, yeah.
Yeah, it definitely like set up like, it's interesting because it's like Jonathan Hickman was like, hey, what if we told a epic with a comic book epic with a beginning, a middle, and an end? And then Marvel was like, but what if it didn't end? And that's one of my questions to you. How do you feel about that? Because it's on the one hand, I get it. It's popular. But also, like, can you just for once in your goddamn lives tell a complete story, please, for the love of God?
I mean, it's Marvel, no. Yeah. And it's frustrating because there are some of the most celebrated periods of Marvel have a definitive ending, or at the very least have an ending to the story that then leads to the next thing.
Yes.
And with respect to this, I don't think that there is an end. I think there's an ending to the Dawn of X, to the Hox and Pox era. Mm-hmm. I think that Hickman's just kind of like, you know, I brought in, you know, 10 or 11, 25, 40 different creators, and they're all having a ball, and there's so much opportunity. You know, we spent a lot of time with setup, but now we're going to live in the world. And I think that he wanted to kind of move to the next chapter, next phase.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's wrangling 30 different people, and they're all kind of like, I mean, I just kind of got my feet wet. I'm kind of enjoying this. And if people are still buying it, why do we have to stop? Mm-hmm. And so he's like, well, I guess I'll just go get my Substack check,
work
on this indie project for a little while. You guys go play. As long as you don't do like this small list of things I need to do at the end, mm-hmm. I'll come back a year or 2 years and we'll wrap it up.
Yeah.
And I feel like there's an opportunity here for us to get more X-Men than before, which the line desperately needed. It needed a guiding star. It needed somebody to helm this ship in the right direction, away from the rocks. And I think it's been fine. And, you know, I'm not necessarily worried, but I do think we're getting an ending. I just think it's just been delayed a while.
And I will tell you, hands down, my favorite book in the X-Men run, because I really enjoyed Marauders. I stayed on that for a minute. I enjoyed Hellions. I liked what that was doing. But the only one that I stuck at, one was super short. But no matter, once it comes back in its new form or whatever, I'm sticking out as Way of X.
Yes.
I love Way of X because when this new era, when it started, it's like, it feels like there's a lot of problems here. Everybody's like, this is like, oh, this is great. And it's like, within the story itself, in this world, it's like, there seems to be like a lot of inherent problems with the Krakoa situation. And Way of X is like the only book that like feels like it's really engaging with that in any tangible way.
I'm sad to tell you, man, Way of X is over. It wrapped up with another one-shot
Onslaught.
Onslaught Revelation.
I read that, but it's coming back as, what is it, Legionnaires?
Legionaries?
Legionaries?
Because I wanted to say Legionnaires, but I feel like DC owns that. So I think they're called Legionaries.
Oh, cool.
And, all right. But yeah, we are getting the Legionaries book, and that I think that's going to carry over the themes and ideas that you were that you're hungry for.
Yeah, Sizemore, because Sizemore also did my favorite did that great Hellblazer run.
Yes. Yeah, that's like the spiritual successor to like the Vertigo period.
Yes,
like 100%. Hellblazer hasn't been as good since then, mm-hmm. except for Spurrier.
Yep.
My pick was originally New Mutants. I loved that run. It was so good. Except I was kind of confused because there were like two different New Mutants going on. There's like one in space that was dope, and then there was one on Earth, and it was not. And every once in a while, I'd pick up the wrong one, and I'm like, what's... No! And then, of course, they learned the lesson, threw away the other one, and went, okay, we're just in space now. And I'm like, yes. And then they dropped that, and I'm like, bye.
Yeah.
But that's another thing about this run is, like, you can drop in and drop out, and you can pick and choose. Like, if you love Cable, boom, pick up a Cable book. It's done, but it's, you know, there's a 12-issue run. You're welcome.
Yeah.
You know, in keeping with our theme. Wolverine, X-Force, there was an X-Factor for a little while. You want to get into the minutiae of how businesses are run and get really bored?
Yeah.
X-Core, there it is. You know, there's a lot of stuff that everyone can get into at some point.
My only other nitpick I'd like to throw out there for this the run of X that we're in, I'd like to see them update the costumes, like have a cohesive like what they did with not necessarily they look the same because of the gala, but like the Hellfire gala, like give everybody new costumes to represent what we're in, because this like hodgepodge picking from the different generations is just like I think we need a cohesive visual tone for this.
You know, I am always like I go back and forth when it comes to the theme of the X costumes. On one hand, I loved the idea. It's kind of like the Avengerization, where it's like these are all different characters who are all coming together to be on one team. So they all have their own distinct identities.
Yeah.
But then I always loved when you dip your toe back in and see like the X Factor period, or maybe just like the classic X-Men, and you get some kind of cohesion in their uniforms. It was always fun to see like the classic yellow and blue, but drawn by Jim Lee. And you're like, whoa,
yeah.
And I thought that was hokey, but now it's awesome. And it's just, but those moments are few and far between. I do like the cohesion, but I also kind of like the individuality. And I know that I'm only just stalling because I just like Rogue in her 90s costume, and I never want to see anything else. So
just don't take away the 90s costume. No, I'm thinking more something along the lines of like Cassidy's revamp of the costumes, where it's like everybody's doing their own thing, but it's still like we're modernizing and we're moving forward. Because I'm like you, I like it when we have different. Very people are wearing the different costumes. It's just like,
yeah,
you know,
but it feels like X-Men. Yeah,
maybe ugh. I'm just stuck up on the other end because like Magneto's wearing that awful white costume. I'm like, hey, I don't like this costume. I kind of
dig
it,
but let me tell you, they're flip flopping between it. Sometimes it'll be black, sometimes it's white nowadays, and you know, it reminds you of that Cullen Bunn period. And and I'm all for it. I'm okay, and I like the idea that Magneto's like feeling kind of like a dark day. I'm gonna wear my dark suit.
It is weird that none of them just wear like clothes. Like you're home,
right?
You're not home. You're not off adventuring. You're home. I don't know that you need the full costume.
You don't need a helmet.
All right. So now, before we get into the other stuff, we're going to talk about What If now. Actually, the latest episode of What If. But before we do that, we are going to take a quick ad break.
You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
All right, welcome back. Now, we've been talking about What If every week on the Patreon. I've been doing my reviews, but I thought this week, since Sal was on, this was a good opportunity to bring it as part of the main show. This week was What If, Episode 8, What If Ultron 1. Now, Roxy, I'm assuming that it's not like you caught up over the weekend.
You know how I feel, DJ. You know how I feel. Well, although I can imagine What If Ultron 1.
Yeah, well, I don't know that you can't. I don't know that you can, because it really, this world's like, I told you a couple weeks ago about where Doctor Strange basically obliterated his universe. This is another one that goes off the rails really badly, really quick. in ways, I think, and I'll be interested to know your thoughts, Sal, because Sal, you're caught up.
I am
okay. So, Roxy, to catch you up, in this last week's episode ended with what essentially looked like Vision in Ultron armor with all the Infinity Stones on the armor. Just showed up out of nowhere. It was a weird, like, left. That's literally the last thing we left on that episode.
What was the premise of last week?
Last week's episode is, what if Thor was an only child? It was basically...
Oh, yeah, with the low-key stuff, they like each other.
Yeah. not my favorite. So that was a setup for this episode where, like it says on the tin, Ultron wins. He basically nukes the planet. The only surviving people that we see, there's presumably others, but of the characters we care about, the only people we see are Hawkeye and Black Widow. And... Ultron rules.
And are Hawkeye and Black Widow, or are they different?
They are the same. Hawkeye has a robot arm now because we're at some indeterminate point in the future after Ultron winning. And then Nat starts using Red Guardian's shield. David Harbour's character from Black Widow, she starts using his shield, which I guess...
cool.
It is cool, but it is one of those that, like... So we didn't need vibranium to make the... We could just make more of these. Not only could we just make more of these shields, but everybody can just use them. You don't need any specific knowledge or training. Yeah, it's just, you can just use them. It's like, all right, whatever. Yeah. And if you thought that was nitpicky, this whole episode, there's a lot of like, wait a second. It gets a little loosey goosey with the rules.
Sure.
So we see Ultron nuking the planet. At some point after that, Thanos showed up, and then Ultron in Vision's body uses the Mind Stone to literally just cut Thanos in half immediately, which is a cool visual, undoubtedly. Super cool. But it is like, oh, so Infinity War was just a big waste of time, is what it was. It was just a big wheel-spinning exercise.
Like, Vision really drops the ball in Infinity War, I got to tell you. He's standing there, like, you know, all sad in the corner, waiting to defend him.
Yeah, we're playing keep away with Vision, and he could have just nerfed
him
in a minute. And people, this was pointed out online, and people were like, Vision got stabbed in an Infinity War? So it's like, oh, yeah, so it's just plot devices. It's just a whole plot device. Anyway, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
He kills Thanos. Immediately gets all the Infinity Stones, starts literally wrecking everything, just obliterating every planet. And this is another part where you're going to get in the weaker elements of What If, because Ultron's motivations in Age of Ultron were already shaky, and spending more time with it, it's like, yeah, I just really don't know what this guy's deal is. Like, I don't know where in his brain he thinks he's doing. I don't know what I'm supposed to get out of this. But anyway,
yeah,
he has a throwdown with Captain Marvel when he's taken out. Sal, what planet is he taking out? He's taking out.
Oh, Xandar.
And he says, I'll use the Soul Stone. And then just everything blows up, which again, I have like, what is the Soul Stone? The Explodey Stone? What was this supposed to be? Anyway, Uatu starts doing his narration thing, like, ah, yes, this was a real bummer and I'm sad about it, but I can't interfere. And Ultron hears the Watcher, just says, like, wait a second, there's a multiverse, breaks through the multiverse. And at this point, I have all the questions because at the beginning of the episode, Watu's like, in your universe, the Avengers just stopped Ultron, but he didn't this time. It's like, wait, who's Uatu supposed to be talking to?
Right.
And then Ultron breaks through the barriers and there's like nobody there. So it's like, is Uatu crazy? Is Uatu just like talking? Like, who is he talking to? And then Ultron's like, you have all this power. You should be doing more with it. And Uatu's like, I made an oath. And I'm like, there's nobody. To who? There's nobody. Where's management? Like, what's
right.
Like, things are off the rails. And then this didn't stick out to me, but once people pointed it out to me, it stood out more. Ultron has the Infinity Stones. He breaks through time and space. And so now he's in Uatu's space, which is theoretically outside of time and space.
Right.
Like the TVA is. And in the TVA, the Infinity Stones are essentially paperweights because they're outside of time and space. So how are Ultron's Infinity Stones working?
Right.
Yeah.
I think that they either don't want to talk about it, which is probably the more likely thing, or they were like, no, you see, they are paperweights in the TVA. They can still do stuff.
Yeah.
But they're not as powerful as like the people in charge of the TVA. You sure. know, like it you could wield them, sure. Like Cliff from accounting could absolutely wield all six Infinity Stones and try to become Lord Master of the TVA. But there's only one timeline, and you'd have to contend with the, you know, with the heads of management. And
and this also gets me into my frustrations there, where we've had like three movies say there's a multiverse, and then Loki shows up like, no multiverse, and then the end.
No, there
Loki
isn't.
Goes, actually, there is one, and it's like, oh my god. Anyway, pick a lane. So Ultron and Uatu get into a fist fight, which I don't know why every character in everybody needs to get in a fist fight at some point. There's not a character in the Marvel universe that's just a thinky person. They got to be able to fight too. I don't even remember how. Basically, Uatu runs off to the evil Doctor Strange's little pocket dimension that he made for himself, and is like, oh, I need help. And for me, as somebody who really liked the anthology nature of the show, and the fact that every episode was its own discrete story, and the more that each of those stories was their own short story that was like kind of complete on its own, the more I enjoyed it. The fact that even this show, an anthology, can't escape the gravitational pull of Marvel's need to like, no, we need universe obliterating stakes, and we need everybody to get into a fist fight. It's like, even this show can't get away from that shit. And that was like the point of this show. Like, this is the one show where the stakes actually matter, where like Doctor Strange could actually obliterate his universe, where Tony Stark could die. And now we've gotten to the point where like, I don't care about any, because I know Ultron's not going to obliterate the multiverse, because we just did a Loki to get it back. We just went through a whole Loki to get it back. We got a Spider-Man movie coming out. Like, this isn't what I signed up for.
right. Yeah. I hear what you're saying. And I on one level, I do agree with you. But on the other, I'm having such a blast watching it that I don't necessarily care. And I think Marvel's counting on that. Like, I kind of like the idea of them making a multiverse Avengers, because what a fun, silly idea that is.
Yeah.
And I like the idea of Ultron like being this multiversal threat, because at least Ultron has something to do, as opposed to him being becoming some inexplicable religious zealot and then dying.
Yeah.
And there's elements of that world that I'm like, I want to see more of that. Like, I want to see Captain Carter team up with evil Doctor Strange and you know, T'Challa, Star-Lord, and more characters like that. Like, I want to see all that, especially because it'll be contained to this universe, you know, like, or the show. Like, it's not like it's going to spin out into more. We are getting a second season, but I think we're going to return back to that anthology. Oof,
I hope so.
We're talking about.
I sure hope so.
It would be rough if season two was just more of the multiversal Avengers. If it became like Exiles, where it's like, now we got to save the multiverse, and they each have to go, that team goes to different universes.
Which, when you pitch it like that, when it's like MCU Exiles, like, well, I'm not against that.
Well, okay,
it's just not what I want. It's just not what I want for this show. Like, I'm with you. I like the idea of like Captain Carter hanging up with Star-Lord, T'Challa on board. Yeah. Also, for some reason, I've got mixed feelings on this Ultron, because one,
it's not James Spader,
and I feel like they should have, instead of even trying to approximate it, they should have just gone. One, why didn't they have Paul Bettany do it? He's done this show before, he'd be great.
Yep.
And it wouldn't be this weird like, are you trying to do a James Spader voice?
It's just almost not James Spader.
Yeah. It's and, like the and other having, ones don't distract me. Like the stand-ins for like Black Widow or Tony Stark, that stuff doesn't bother me. This was one I was like, this isn't right.
I got to tell you, by the way, just a quick shout out to Lake Bell for playing Black Widow in these shows.
Yeah.
She's so great.
Mm-hmm.
She was so great as Poison Ivy. She's so great as Black Widow. I'm like, more Lake Bell, please. She's so great.
Agreed.
But yeah, man, having rewatched a little bit of Age of Ultron after seeing this episode, I was like, the appeal of Ultron is James Spader.
Yes, because nothing else about the character, the way it's set up in the MCU, really makes any sense. Like, it doesn't work. It's just whatever James Spader is able to imbue into it. I will say, I think I'm more scared of this Ultron than standard Ultron or even Thanos. Like it's like, this guy is a scary dude. Because he's, Roxy didn't see, but he's like, he literally like eats a galaxy. Like, he uses the Infinity Stone to grow massive and eat a galaxy. And it's like, Yeah, man. This is, and I do like that element of this where it's like, yeah, you want to see somebody like really go ape shit with the Infinity Stones. Here right. you go. And it's like, okay, so that is cool. I just, again, I the more self-contained nature I thought was a real boon to this series because yes. like, I enjoyed Shang-Chi. Once it gets into the world ending, whatever, my brain turned off because it's like, well, I don't care about this. I was more interested in the father-son conflict because that's an actual conflict that has stakes as opposed right. to this one, which doesn't. And so I was thankful that like, what if like, we don't even need to worry about this because one, you literally could end the world if you want. You just could. And now we're to this like, why every time? Why?
I know, man. I hear you. I am 100% in agreement with you. And I also still like this episode. It's one of those things where I'm just like, I enjoyed this. And yeah, it's funny with Marvel and with these things, whenever they do this, I always like with Spider-Man, like MCU Spider-Man, like I love everyone and I love all of his appearances. And I'm still hoping for a grounded New York centric Spider-Man movie. Someday. Like, right. And I'm just like, maybe they'll get to do the next one. You know, like literally it takes like thousands of people and millions of dollars mm-hmm. and years of time to make these movies. And then the one comes out and it's not quite what I asked for or what I've been expecting or what I'm hoping for. And I just go, well, I had fun. Hopefully the next one, they'll shrink it down, which of course is never going
to
happen.
They won't. Cause they needed to make $1 billion. Listen, I don't even need to be set in New York. I'll settle for like, hey, what if you just like made Aunt May and MJ like characters with like right. motivations and yeah. desires yeah. like you know, outside of their relationship with Peter, like they want things, you know.
Yes.
Yes. Anyway, so Roxy, based on what I've sold, have I sold you on What If?
Exactly opposite. But I do feel like what's so interesting about what you were saying today, DJ, is that if Sal had come on any other episode, he would have thought that you guys were on the same page about What If. Like, this is the first time that you've kind of turned on One.
Last week's was not my favorite either.
Yeah.
Really? I kind of dug it.
Last week's was a little
But like up until that, the first one you thought was fine. And then after that, it hit the ground running yeah. for you. And any of the, and then the zombie stuff, I know that you love, I love zombies. Mm-hmm. But like, it just feels like you went from this being your favorite of the Marvel Disney Plus shows when I was listening to you talk about it to... Yes. You're actually kind of off that life right now.
I kind of am. Like, if episode yeah. two, so the Star-Lord T'Challa episode and the What If, where they've all the Avengers died, Fury's big week, but all the Avengers die.
Yes.
Loved. Like, it was some of my favorite thing. I think the T'Challa Star-Lord episode is my favorite Guardians MCU thing. Love it. And the Killmonger episode, you're absolutely right, Roxy. Like, a lot of, like, just way on board. And I just a little and unfortunately, it seems like even with Falcon and Winter Soldier, which I loved, the last episode happened. I'm like, all right, well, that was I really enjoyed Black Widow. And then we get to the ending. I'm like, all right. You know what I mean? And it's a disappointing pattern with this stuff where we get to the end and they just can't quite like stick the landing.
Well, they just can't help themselves.
Yeah.
Like they gotta do that thing, like,
and they don't have to because their movies are making $1 billion all the time.
that's what kills me is like Black Widow would have made the same amount of money if it cost $80 million and it was just about that her going to Madripoor, mm-hmm. assassinating people, having her get doxxed, and then having her like it could have just been a child like you know sale ring mm-hmm. and her taking it down. Like it could have been the Red Room was dissolved and they're selling the former Black Widows on the black market in Madripoor. She's got to stop it. It could have like literally just been that, and it still would have made however much money it made because now it's a secret because it didn't come out in theaters. But like, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like they have the clout. Yeah. You can upend the apple cart now.
Yeah,
but like they can't because I think because it's Hollywood. I mean, you know how it is. Yeah. Like if it's a sure thing, I'm gonna bet on that yeah. versus the not sure thing because I'm gambling with millions of dollars.
They have a formula, God forbid. And I think that's my big. So we talked a little bit about it. I've gotten a little bit of trouble on Twitter today for suggesting that I like Spider-Man 3 better than the MCU Spider-Man movies. And I think part of my issue with the Spider-Man movies is that same like you know exactly what you're getting, and yes. that's a feature, not a bug. Like there is no experimentation. There is no like, hey, maybe let's try and it's like we're going to give you the thing that you expect, because that's one of the reasons people like these movies is they walk out of it getting what they expect. Doesn't matter if you yes. go to a McDonald's in LA or in Hong Kong, you're getting the same fucking burger. And right. it's that. And again. That might not be my favorite thing, But there's a reason that the McDonald's of the world are they're so ubiquitous.
Yes. Yes.
So like, I don't know. But yeah, they you're right. They don't need to, there's no need for them to change it up. And that's another thing that like trips me out when everybody gets mad at like the Martin Scorsese's or Denny Villeneuve's of the world. They're like, yeah. Why are they always picking on Marvel? And it's like, this is the fucking biggest movie franchise in the world. If there is one thing that is the definition of punching up, it is this. It's not like, this isn't the whippy kid in the corner that they're wailing on. They're literally saying, looking at the most successful film industry on the planet, being like, hey, the movies themselves could be better. That's all
they're kind of samey.
Yeah, they're like, kind of...
It's it could like be worse.
Going to the McDonald's Avenger, like, hey, you know all the burgers? There's nothing like new or different about them. And then people getting angry about it. This is fast food. And they're like, it's like, well.
Yeah, this could be a filet mignon. It's like, you're in the McDonald's, sir.
DJ, I have just spent the last 5 minutes going down a rabbit hole of the responses to this tweet of yours.
Oh, my God. I considered actually torching the episode because I saw it and I was like, there is no way he meant that. You know what? I'm just going to say it.
The way you phrase the tweet is savage, DJ. You underplayed this like crazy. I mean,
he was like, come at me.
Yeah, you really did. And like all of our friends are coming at you. Wow.
Here's the thing. It's like I said, it's the fact that when you go, and we don't need to derail on this whole thing, but when you... I would assume a lot of people commenting on it have not rewatched the movie recently.
Rewatched it very recently.
So you may agree or disagree with this. One thing, a lot of the problems with Spider-Man 3 are they presaged a lot of the issues of superhero films now. Right. Too much plot, too many characters, too much of all that stuff as opposed to characterization and stuff like that. That's literally like fucking every MCU movie. So if that's your problem, I mean, I got bad news for you. but also it has scenes, it has moments like there's a moment when Peter is talking to Aunt May. He's getting ready to propose to MJ and Aunt May talks to him about how Uncle Ben proposed to her. And it says a lot about Aunt May and her history. It talks a lot about her history with Peter.
And such a good scene.
And it talks about what what motivates Peter and his perspective. And I dare you to find a scene like that in the MCU Marvel movies. I can't think of one, especially not one with Aunt May, because they've devolved Aunt May to a one note joke of she's hot, which Marissa Tomei has no issues there. But like Aunt May is the heart.
You just say Marissa Tomei is she's there? Is that how you finish that sentence?
She's hot. I mean, you've seen her. She's hot. She is hot. I'm just saying, one, it's Marissa Tomei. She's capable of so much more as an actress.
She has range.
And if you, again, on the other side of it, speaking of him proposing, you've got Mary Jane. And what I think is interesting about all three of those movies is when Mary Jane's career is going up, Peter's life is going down and vice versa, which I have found to be kind of true of relationships when you're in a better place, your partner is kind of in a lower place and you have to manage that. So as Peter's life is way on the upswing for once, MJ's career's on the back half. And what makes that work is I know what MJ wants. I know what her goals are. She has goals completely separate of Peter's.
Yes.
And I don't know what Zendaya wants in the MCU movies. I don't even know why she's with Peter. I don't know what in her mind, what the appeal of what Peter is. I can look at.
I don't think that's completely fair, DJ. She's a lot younger.
Right.
Not the same phase of life
where like you know what you want. I think part of the point is not knowing what you want.
But that's the thing
not
is
not being able to have the space to figure out what you want because you're so engulfed in somebody else's life that you can't even figure out what your own wants and desires are.
But that's not what's happening. They're not saying anything about MJ. That's the point. They don't care. MJ's just there to be the love interest. I don't think that's an excuse to make her not be a character. Like
I don't read it like that. Hmm? I don't read it like that. I happen to, and I say this anytime I'm asked, there's never been a Spider-Man movie I didn't love, ever. I love every single Spider-Man movie. So I'm maybe not the right person to fight this fight because I'm not going to sit here and rag on Spider-Man 3 when I love that movie. Mm-hmm. But I love every Spider-Man movie because I think that they've done such a great job. Spider-Man's an incredible character to watch on screen. And so I feel like all three of the castings have been majorly different. and they've all brought something new to the table. So I'm with you that I think we need to see more Zendaya explored, which hopefully they're going to do in this next movie.
I don't know but how, considering they're introducing a three other movies worth of Spider-Man characters.
But how are you going to use that argument, DJ, when you just said that everybody else, every other movie is fully loaded? This one's going to be fully loaded too.
That's what I'm saying is there's no room to explore Zendaya as a character, because we've got to talk about, we've got Iron Man and Nick Fury and Mysterio, and in this movie we've got Doc Ock and we've got this and we've got that. So it's amazing to me that everybody looks at No Way Home and it's like, I'm so excited, they're gonna have three Spider-Man and six villains and whatever, and yet they'll turn around at Spider-Man 3 and like, there's too many characters in this movie. And it's just inexplicable to me that how the MCU has created this like bubble for themselves that makes them completely immune to it. Everybody treats it like these movies are going to be stone cold classics forever and ever. Everybody 10 years from now is going to look back at them and say they're perfect, and there's no room to critique. And I'm like,
but DJ, you didn't say hot take, this is how I feel. You said it's time we all agree. That is how you phrase it. It's time we all agree. And then the closeout is the best. That's just science.
Listen, I tried to make, I just wanted to make it funny.
Got that buzz.
I wanted to make it funny. I don't, here's my big question to myself is, I don't know why I didn't think, I assumed nobody was going to even, I didn't think it was going to get any likes. I thought it was just going to be like, whatever, I'm just throwing this into the wind. Nobody's going to give a shit.
Sure.
Okay, like shy boy in the corner, wondering if anybody's going to notice him.
Right.
Casual tweet. Everyone's like, we see you, DJ.
Yeah. While Spider-Man 3 is trending and everyone's talking about how bad it is, DJ comes in and is like, actually.
Yeah.
Time for us all to agree, right?
Actually, it was brilliant. And it's like,
The thing, and that's the part she didn't say, is I think it is easily the worst of the Raimi movies.
Yes.
And I think when people think about Spider-Man, they think about when they watched it after Spider-Man 2.
Right.
And we've had decades of superhero movies since then that I think when you revisit it, you're like, oh, this is actually either A, better than I remember, or B, like most modern superhero movie, it a lot of its problems, give or take, and I think maybe that's the reason why maybe Marvel sticks to its formula, so there is literally no chance that you could have a memeable moment. There's literally no way any scene in these movies, we're not going to allow enough creative freedom to run the risk that any of these scenes will have like a emo dance number meme moment. Like, we're just not going to even risk that happening.
Right, but that did happen though. Like, yes. We did get an emo dance moment. We did get him deliberately changing his hair in an alleyway convenient mirror. We did get Sandman and Venom literally talk to each other and say almost verbatim, we should have a team up. We did get Topher Grace as Eddie Brock, which is one of the most like deliberately bad casting blunders of all time. We did get deliberate studio interference from Avi Arad, who was like, we got to put Venom in here. We did have Sam Raimi, who didn't want to put this character in here and didn't have the clout to be able to say no. We did have Sandman, one of the lamest Spider-Man villains, as the top, clearly his number one choice.
Yes,
for the crescendo.
But the way they utilize Sandman.
Yes, it looks great.
Looks super fucking cool.
It does look very cool. Yeah. Everyone always talks about the great moment. And listen, it's a spectacularly visual scene when Sandman comes together and there's that brilliant score. Music in Spider-Man in the Raimi trilogy can't be denied. Every villain has a wonderful score. I feel like they should have used it in the trailer for No Way Home, because Doc Ock has a really baller theme.
Yeah,
but you know, I don't know why movies love to use lockets. You know, Spawn.
Oh yeah,
he misses his wife. He needs a locket because we got to visually show the picture of Wanda. Yeah. He's her husband. It's a ring. The cartoon put the ring in there. But anyway, you got to always do these lockets. And I get that, like, it's sad. He's trying to pick it up, but he can't because he can't get himself together. But, like, I don't care about Sandman. I'm not here for Sandman. I'm here for Spider-Man. And I'm here for him to fight a really baller villain. And we've just been setting up. We spent two movies setting up Lizard and Harry. And we get no Lizard and Paintballer Harry.
Don't worry. You're just going to, by the way, but we got to say that fight scene, that first fight scene with Harry, I think is a better fight scene than any of the other MCU movies. No, I also,
the Mysterio fight is pretty amazing.
Mysterio fight's pretty cool.
Science, Sal. You can't fight with science.
I can't argue with science.
Can't argue with science.
I love the Rhino fight in Amazing Spider-Man 2. Like, there are, there's some great stuff in those movies. It's just visually speaking.
I need to quickly rewind to the locket thing, because every time I see these in the movies, and it's not just these movies, it's every movie.
No, it's every movie.
Where are they printing? Like, how do you get... They're so small. And I've always wished that anybody would care about me enough to get me a locket. But then I'm worried if they did, where do you... You go to Kinko's?
Like, Things Remembered, I guess. Just like a store in the mall that sells lockets and does photographs. Like, I nowadays, I have no idea.
Tiny, and then they cut it out. Like, you have to be really good.
Yeah. Yeah. First of all, you got to be able to print out a picture of somebody that's the size of a postage stamp.
Or, secondly, like you said, or just like cut it down. You got a normal size picture and you cut it down.
Yeah.
To fit.
But still, even the locket, they're so small, DJ. Like, you would need to be it would have to be one of those. Remember, you took class photos. Maybe this isn't for you, DJ. You take class photos where you got the 50 people in your class and you're one of them. Like, that's the little thing.
That's the picture you got to cut out. I will also say I've had some people in the comments try and convince me that the Amazing movies are better. And I've just got to point out that there is a scene in the first Amazing Spider-Man film where Spider-Man takes a call on the sidewalk and he's Spider-Man. It's like an important call and he's just standing on the sidewalk. It's clearly a fucking reshoot. And it's like, this is a guy that can climb walls and like hangs out on roofs. And he's just on a street corner as people are walking by like, tell me more.
Yeah, it's so lame.
Anyway,
it's not lame, it's perfect. Don't the Amazing Spider-Man 2, I have the most love of all the Spider-Man movies for, so I can't even be in these conversations.
I think Amazing Spider-Man 2 is definitely better than Amazing Spider-Man 1. Think Tom Holland.
Oh, good.
I think Tom Holland is probably the best Peter Parker casting. I obviously have a lot of love for the Raimi trilogy. I think Tom Holland is better is better casting, which is why.
So can we all just agree that Amazing Spider-Man 2 is the best of the movies? Because that's science.
I think we can all agree that Amazing Spider-Man 1 is the worst.
No comment.
Spider-Man 3 is the worst.
Sal, when was the last time you watched Spider-Man 3?
Like a year ago.
Okay. All right.
Like I see because it's always on TV.
And you think Amazing Spider-Man, the first Amazing Spider-Man is better than that?
The first Amazing Spider-Man, I don't even consider a movie. Like, that thing is just, that is just an executive meeting come to life. Like, every time I watch that movie, I remember seeing the trailer for Amazing Spider-Man 1 and that narration where he's like, but my biggest mystery has been my parents. And I'm like, he's never given a crap about his parents.
Nobody, literally nobody cares about Spider-Man's parents.
But like, some dude in a suit behind a very expensive desk, like, on the West Coast.
It was Roxy.
Okay. It was Roxy.
She's like, what's up with his parents?
This is not a Spider-Man 3 episode. I fucking totally derailed us with my stupid tweet.
I'm sorry.
It's me. We're going to go to a quick ad break, and then we're going to come back and we're going to talk about Venom, goddammit.
All right, Venom.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right, we are back from our brief ad break, where Roxy and Sal continue to yell at me about my favorite movies. We're going to... Spider-Man 3 is not my favorite movie. I'm just saying. And then some people were like, oh, what about Spider-Verse? And I'm like, I specifically said live action for a reason.
That's a cartoon.
Okay. Yeah, I said live action.
Do it again. Start the argument again.
Anyway, let's talk about Venom. Okay. We're going to talk about Venom. And so if you want to hear Roxy Mai's review for Venom, Let There Be Carnage, that's going to be part of the Patreon. So stay tuned for that. Or if you want to check it out, go to patreon.com/onlystupidanswers. But we're just going to talk about Venom, the character. Sal, you're a comics man. What is your relationship with the character of Venom?
Venom and I go back a long ways. I loved that character when I was a kid. I bought all of those awful miniseries that he was in. I remember buying... not his first appearance, but I think it's Amazing 375 when they springboarded it as like a backdoor pilot for Lethal Protector, like on the stands. I Venom's a really, I remember him being such a dope character. I loved the idea, just the dichotomy between the two characters. One is full of responsibility. One tries to like shirk off all the responsibility, blame everybody else for his problems. And Spider-Man is like, I've never seen Spider-Man more afraid mm-hmm. than when he's fighting Venom in the early days. It was so cool.
And I do wonder if that's kind of like, cause I'm similar, you know, growing up in the 90s, like Venom was Venom was a tits, man. Venom was great. To the point where I had a similar thing. I was at my comic shop and they had a copy of Spider-Man 300. Oh. And I looked at the price tag and I was like, can I justify this to my wife?
It only gets more.
And I'm like, can I? And in hindsight, I should have fucking bought it. But anyway, because I did my typical thing. I'm like, I'll think about it. And literally the next person came in and bought it. But
yeah.
Similar to you, because you think about it, and it's like, I think what interests me about Venom is because he was so scary, because he's immune to Spider-Man spider sense. He knows who Peter Parker is. He fucking hates his guts. But then I thought about it. It's like, well, Green Goblin knew. So I wonder if it's because we grew up in the 90s. It's like, oh, this is the guy.
Yeah. And in the 90s, Gobby was dead. So it's like there was no other equivalent. But you know what it is? That's just such a rad look.
It
like
looks
Venom
so
just
cool.
looks so much cooler.
Yes. 100%. Roxy, do you know when you first encountered Venom?
I'm trying to think about it because I really was into whatever my big brother was into, and he was more in the 90s and the DC side than the Marvel side of things. But I think that exactly what you guys just said hit the nail on the head for me is when I first did encounter Venom, I'm trying to think of exactly when that was. I just remember thinking, wow, like this is edgy. This is cooler. This is like Black is dope. Like just thinking in the most basic of terms. And then I remember that awful casting totally ruining it for me. I don't have bad things to say about Spider-Man, but oh boy, do I have things to say.
And it's wild too, because you can see what they were going for. They were like, oh, evil Peter Parker. Yeah, they were going for evil Peter Parker. They're like, what's the opposite?
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, but that's not... Venom's like, he's a big fucking dude. Like that's kind of his bit, which is also, if you think about it, opposite of Spider-Man. So it's like, I see what they were going for, and we'll get more to it later. I still don't think we've had a movie featuring Venom where the creators are actually like, oh, Venom's cool. I still don't think that movie exists yet. But,
no, I think you're right.
We're not getting there yet. But here's the thing with Venom, and I've heard people point it out line recently with the movie coming out. Venom is objectively kind of gross. He's got the tongue thing. He's got the drool. He's a goopy boy. So I wanted Roxy and I discussed this. I wanted to know from you who you think the grossest villain is. And then I'm going to mention mine. And I'm going to see, Roxy, you're going to decide who you think is grosser.
We really, really sell the grossness, Sal.
Okay, because I have my grossest villain. It was the one that came right to my mind. It was a Marvel villain, but I do have, and I feel like it's a ringer because it's more about their behavior than about their aesthetic. But I do have a backup in case it doesn't count. The grossest villain I've ever encountered, every time it ever comes up, is Dr. Miles Warren, aka the Jackal.
I think you're going for a different gross than I meant.
It's a different gross. It's not Venom gross. This guy is a old, want to say like late 50s, early 60s college professor, creeps on Peter's girlfriend Gwen Stacy enough to steal her DNA, clones a version of her to keep for himself, and every time he comes back to life he has like a harem of Gwen clones. It's just the most disgusting, and every time you get further and further into who this guy is, he is just so gross. And it just drives me crazy every time because no one ever talks about it. Like they use it. Sometimes they use it to like absurd degrees. And I'm like, this is beyond problematic. This is a war crime at this point.
He's
super gross. But if you want to go like more aesthetic, Swarm is pretty gross.
Swarm is gross. It's just a person made of bees.
It's a Nazi of bees. So
it is a Nazi of bees. Oh, goddamn.
It's a Nazi bee, man. He's literally bones that have bees. That's that like pretend to be musculature and they collectively like have the consciousness of a former. Well, he's not really a former. He's just former human, but a Nazi. Mm-hmm. So you got the Nazi angle, which is always gross. And then you got the bee angle. Are they making honey? Because mm-hmm. they're always bees. They're not wasps.
Yeah, they're bees.
They make honey.
Yeah.
They make,
so is there a queen in
Nazi
there?
Is there a queen? Where
does the honey go? Oh, no. Maybe he's delicious. Maybe
yeah,
he's
right?
delicious.
I don't know.
I was going
to
go.
He does have abs, though. The bees are making abs.
They have to make abs, Roxy. They have to.
Yeah. And oh, and he's naked too.
Yeah.
It's just bees and a cloak.
And a cloak. My go-to, whenever I think gross villains, I got to go with MODOK. I got to go MODOK because I always wonder what's going on in that machine in there. How does MODOK go to the bathroom? What's that situation going on like? Do you have to drain? Do things leak out of the head? Do you have to drain the head?
You got
to
drain him. I think because MODOK, the M stands for machine, right?
Yes.
I think
machine, I think only designed for only killing. I don't know.
Yeah, designed only. Yeah, I don't remember how it goes, but like, yeah, I think he's like half machine. So maybe if he is drained, it's only of like his oil.
Oh,
which sounds horrible. Oh. I have another one.
It stands for mental or mobile or mechanized organism designed only for killing.
I love that. Not even the comics fucking know. Clearly every writer that came in was like, I guess this is what the M stands for, whatever. Who gives a shit?
Yeah, I'm making it up. And it's always the same MODOK. It's never like, I'm MODOK 5.
Yeah, yeah,
like,
yeah.
Nope, it's the same MODOK and it just changed the M. The other one I grew up, one of our classic villains that it's like one you wouldn't expect. And it's the Rhino. The Rhino, his pathos originally.
Yep.
He's trapped in the suit. So it's this big fat dude in a big like rhino hide suit. There's only one exit point and it's the face.
Yeah.
It's the face.
What does that mean?
his original pathos is he can't take the suit off, which means where does it go?
Yeah.
When he needs to go.
Is there a
it
hole
must
down
come
there?
Come out the front. And if it comes out the front,
unless there's a hold out there,
it builds up in the suit enough until it.
Well, here's my thing. Our solution for that was he gets a bigger villain like Sandman, and Sandman just squeezes him every so often, and it just exits through the front hole.
Did you watch?
You said to go gross, and I'm sorry.
Did you watch the Spectacular Spider-Man cartoon?
I loved the Spectacular.
I like that Rhino and Sandman were buddies.
Yeah,
good buddies. Too. Also, best explanation for supervillains ever. It's like, yeah, there's a crime boss that's paying for it so that Spider-Man's out of his hair.
Yeah, it's amazing.
The Rhino thing, because it's like so tight to his.
It's face. Too. Yeah. It's too tight. Yeah,
you're not talking about a big hole where the poop can kind of come out the neck. I mean, either in the eyes or the mouth situation.
Yeah,
yeah.
And it's one of those things where he knows that it has to happen periodically. Where he's like, "Well, it's the fifth of the month, Sandman. I need you to squeeze me.
I don't think that periodically. You think that somebody named Rhino, somebody who's doing what Rhino?
It's true.
Doing,
he's a big boy. He's a big boy. He's having down to put down a lot of carbs to keep.
Damn to, right. Yeah.
Excuse me. He's got to put down a lot of calories to keep that physique going. So in the Discord chat, we have Leonard Kim says, I would argue that Abomination gives Venom a run for his money. And I would say that's possibly true if you consider the Immortal Hulk's Abomination.
Yes.
Who has a hand for a face. And then Ryan McCoy says, Venom is just goop. He can't be more gross than this thing. And it was a picture of Ebony Maw from Infinity War.
Yeah.
Which he's definitely everybody's got some stuff going on there. So Roxy, based on the submissions,
you know where I'm going, DJ. It's got to be poop face Rhino.
It's got to be poop face Rhino.
There's nothing grosser than that pitch. Listen, I mean, the morally gross is one thing. There's a lot of morally gross people. I don't know how you argue that a bee Nazi is not horribly morally gross, but poop face. Like you can't fight with that. But I don't know that I have a good grasp on what gross is sometimes, because I don't feel like Venom is gross at all.
You know, again, I grew up in the 90s, so I'm inclined to agree with you. You saw some of the discourse, and when people were pointing out, like, I guess it's a little weird.
The tongue thing, kind of down for it.
Oh, maybe Venom will give you a locket.
Venom, so sweet. I've always wanted one. Thank you.
So real quick, Sal, I know you got to go. We got to wrap this up. We got this one question from STS 2884. Are you okay with the comics and the movie separating Venom and Spidey more? Also, why doesn't Miles have his own version of Venom? I mean, he does. It's Venom.
It's Ultimate Venom.
It is Ultimate Venom. But real quick, parting shot. Are you okay with the way they've kind of separated Venom and Spidey?
I am okay with it. You know, Venom and Spider-Man have been frenemies longer than they have been enemies at this point.
That's true.
So it doesn't surprise me. And, you know, I love Spider-Man in the MCU, and I know Sony needs their money. So I'm okay with them going full tilt Venom franchise if they are satiated enough to allow there to be a sending receiving contract with Marvel to allow Spider-Man to continue to bomb around with Avengers characters. Mm-hmm. So I'm okay with it.
You'll sacrifice Venom to have Spider-Man keep hanging out with the Avengers.
That's the thing, is that I love Venom, but he's not my favorite Spider-Man villain, so I'm okay with him just being his own thing. Plus, there's limitless potential with Venom. Like, you could do any number of his spinoffs, or you could bring in Miles. And Venom has a really solid connection with Miles, at least from the Ultimate Universe. And
Who's your favorite? I can't let you brush over that. I just need to know.
As far as Spider-Man villains go, I don't know, actually. I just know it's not Venom.
It's like, I just know it's not that.
Right? It's I don't know. There are so many.
Listen.
What a Sophie's choice. I'm sorry. I'm just like,
depends on your mood. I get it.
What a great question. Tough though. We'll have to have
in the Spotify question, will be like, what is Sal's favorite Spider-Man villain? Mm-hmm. All right.
Yes.
Sal, we got to let you go. Pitch to the kids where you're at, where they can find you.
Come over to youtube.com/comicpop or I think it's comicpop.tv, but check us out. That'll just take you to the YouTube channel, but join us over there or on our supplemental channel, Comic Pop Returns, where we do live shows and podcasts and stuff like that. But both channels, you'll be fine. Come by and check us out and hang out with us and talk comics. It'll be a lot of fun.
Roxy, before we go, remind the kids at home where they can find you and what they should be looking out for.
Everywhere at Roxy Stryer, and also on the World Girls Wednesdays and Sunday, where we're giving everything a whirl. This past Wednesday, we dropped our Domino's episode where we tried to create our logo out of Domino's. It took us 5 hours to build, and you get a 10-minute produced episode that is a lot more fun than the actual experience.
Good. There you go. That's the point. That's why we do what we do. So check all that out. I did see some of on the social medias. I saw some of you posting clips.
It was so grueling. It was amazing when it was done. Like, I felt so accomplished, but it was tough.
Yeah.
It was tough. Me and all the 4-year-olds out there, we had a hard time with it.
We had a hard time with it. Yeah, you can find me everywhere that matters on DJ Talks Trash. If you want to dunk on my Spider-Man tweet, that's where you can find it. You can find the show everywhere that matters at Only Stupid Answers, but on Twitter.
Yanked out the vowels from stupid.
All right, go check all that out. Please give us 5 stars, rate and review, share this podcast, all of that stuff. Again, if you want to hear Roxy Mai's review for Venom, Let There Be Carnage, go check it out on patreon.com/onlystupidanswers. And we will see you all next week. Bye, everybody.